He was saying it would be a global currency that would be controlled by central bankers for the purposes of protecting the central banks, which means protecting the money center banks in the United States and particularly London and Europe. And they said, we need a regime change in international monetary policy. And what they said explicitly is that central banks should make fiscal policy. In other words, central banks should not just be responsible for money, but they should then determine where the money goes instead of governments doing that. You couldn't come up with a better definition of a banker's dictatorship than these two proposals. But then go a step further. So it would be a virtual currency that would be in the hands of a small group of financial interests who would use their power to control governments.
I am proud to offer another great product, ProxyStem Stem Cell Pro. This amazing product supports 8 areas of stem cell health, including the AMPK gene, which in a UCLA study, researchers showed in an animal model that by increasing the amount of AMPK in the body, they can increase a healthy lifespan by approximately 30%. mTOR inhibition. The mTOR inhibition has extended mouse mean lifespan by 33%. Also, biogenesis. The additional PQQ triggers mitochondrial biogenesis, which increases the number of mitochondria in your cells. These are the powerhouses of your cells. The energy-hungry brain and heart is believed to benefit greatly from PQQ. ProxyStem ingredients also increases the amount of telomerase protein that cells make when they're in a state of telomerase activation. With all the healthy cell benefits, this formula is the most advanced formula we have seen on the market. Also, with Rev Genetics' brand new formula, it comes in a lower price. This means you're getting the best price anywhere for this product. Click the link below to see studies and to buy yours today. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Harley Schlinger coming back. He is just brilliant, talking about economics, world economics, talking about what Trump needs to do, the coup that's happening with the bankers and the Federal Reserve against Trump. And, you know, it's the fact that it's treason. How does China and Russia fit into this? It's just, it's a great, great conversation. It's reality. It's things that people need to hear. It's a different perspective than you're ever going to get in the mainstream media. It's really important that we do this, you know. The coup that's going on against Trump, what are their reasons for doing this? What are their actions? Is it because they are heavily in debt and they're losing power? And are they controlled by the City of London? You know, the whole financial sector and Wall Street? The Fed actually came out and are against, they think, mixing politics and federal and economic policy, they think it's their responsibility to not let Trump get reelected. But then you got to wonder, what are their actions and in the past? And do they really do things for the betterment of the people of the United States? Or is it to protect their own interest and the wealthy bankers that maybe are sitting in the City of London and not even in this country? Maybe in both countries, I don't know. But we really need to take a step back and wonder why they're doing what they're doing and why it's okay to openly play their hands on treason. And this is what we're going to talk about. And it's a great, very smart conversation that you just won't hear in the mainstream media. I don't think they even maybe have the ability to talk like this in the platforms they have, because they won't let anybody talk for any length of time that's meaningful. And when they start to talk about things that might not put bankers, the Fed Reserve, or some other powerful players in a good light, they shy away from it. But it's about time that we really look at what the truth is here and look at these different perspectives and have a reasonable conversation, but not just amongst us, but get it into the halls of Washington, D.C., get it into Congress. And how can we make a difference in this country and start looking to the future? So let's get into this amazing interview now with Harley Schlinger. Hi, Harley. Thank you so much. Welcome back to the program.
I'm really happy to be back with you, Sarah.
Seems like we have a slight delay, so hopefully it won't be a problem in the interview. I'll try to do my best not to cut you off here and there. But you have been writing some amazing blog posts lately, just summarizing what's really going on with the coup and the G7 and Russia and China, and trying to give people an idea of really what's happening on the geopolitical, monetary, economic horizon. And one of the things that really caught my eye is the fact that the G7 was really not anything, but the real activity was going on in Wyoming with bankers there scheming some plots. Can you talk about why or what was happening at that meeting, who was there, and then we can get into some of the proposals that they came up with?
Sure. I mean, I think the starting point is that after the Mueller Russiagate collapsed, Trump was back on his feet again and moving ahead. At the G20 meeting, he met with Putin, with Xi of China, he met with Abe of Japan, and was moving things. And at the same time, he was moving against what the Federal Reserve was doing, now attacking Powell for not lowering rates. Now, we can get into that later because that in itself is not a solution. But what happened was, having lost the fight with Russiagate, the people trying to get rid of Trump didn't give up on the idea of a coup. They tried to use this Trump is a racist narrative for a little while, and that really didn't go anywhere. So then we saw the big guns come out, namely the banksters, the financial operators. And you had three proposals put forward either at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, which is a Federal Reserve conference, or around the conference. The first one was the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, proposed that we set up a synthetic hegemonic currency, which would replace the dollar, a kind of digital currency or virtual currency, as he called it. And of course, this would be totally controlled by central bankers.
How does that compare to a cryptocurrency, or is that one step away from a full-blown cryptocurrency?
Well, it's a kind of cryptocurrency. He wasn't explicit, but he said it would be a virtual currency based on nothing physical. In other words, anyone who wanted to go back to gold or gold reserve or silver or something like that, or even a market basket of currencies, forget it. He was saying it would be a global currency that would be controlled by central bankers for the purposes of protecting the central banks, which means protecting the money center banks in the United States and particularly London and Europe. So it was it's a fraudulent proposal, but it verges on, and I think he used the term, helicopter money. In other words, we need more spending, so we're just going to create more money. But there's no guarantee that money ever gets into the hands of consumers, or more importantly, into producers. It would go into the speculative bubble. Now, this was then backed up by a second proposal coming from BlackRock. You know BlackRock, the big equity firm. They had four central bankers, including Stanley Fischer, formerly of the Fed, Hildebrand, formerly of the Swiss Central Bank. And they said, we need a regime change in international monetary policy. And what they said explicitly is that central banks should make fiscal policy. In other words, central banks should not just be responsible for money, but they should then determine where the money goes instead of governments doing that. Well, why have elections? Why have Congress or parliaments if you're going to have a so-called group of experts who will create increased volumes of funny money and then direct it where they want it to go?
Well, that's a complete takeover. That's a recommendation for a complete takeover of our government and the governments of the world by the bankers, officially.
Exactly. It's exactly. It's you couldn't come up with a better definition of a banker's dictatorship than these two proposals. But then go a step further. The third proposal that came out at the same time was for a green financial initiative. And this includes Bernie Sanders calling for $17 trillion to replace fossil fuels, nuclear, and coal to go into solar and so-called sustainable energy, which is a disastrous approach. But what would it mean? It would mean new speculative bubbles in carbon credits, in determining who gets money for energy production. It would be another top-down control over production. And it would be aimed at shutting off the rest of the manufacturing sector in the United States and Western Europe. So these are three proposals that would ensure that governments would have no control over their currency, credit, and debt. And these are aimed at what President Trump talks about when he talks about national sovereignty. National sovereignty really means that the people make the policy through their government, through institutions of self-government that are in the interest of the whole nation. That's what national sovereignty means. Now what they're saying is that the bankers should do this, and they should do it on behalf of their sense of perceived interests. Now, what I found really fascinating is they had to address the question of, wouldn't this helicopter money be hyperinflationary? Wouldn't it move from a trickle into a heavy flow, and then, like we're seeing in Argentina or Zimbabwe, have a complete collapse of currencies? Because they are talking about getting rid of the dollar. And what better way to do it than hyperinflating it? So what they said is, no, a group of experts will be monitoring to make sure that doesn't happen. And I asked the question, are these the same experts who created the bubble in 2008? The same experts who created an even bigger debt bubble since 2008? And if you have a group of experts, who needs government?
Experts. Yeah. That's a joke.
So it would be a virtual currency that would be in the hands of a small group of financial interests who would use their power to control governments. And what recourse would people have if they want to change the policy? You could vote in another government, but now you've given the so-called independent central banks the power over the life and breath of an economy, which is the ability to create credit and to make sure that some of that credit gets into production. We've been losing that consistently. This is something LaRouche warned about when we went off the gold reserve standard in 1971, that if you have a floating exchange rate, you're giving the speculators control over everything. Well, the speculators control the central banks, and they now are demanding full and total control.
This is scary. I mean, this is a complete loss of our country, because they can just take us under at that point and do whatever they want. And the printing of money, as we all know, will go to bail out them and their interests and not the people. They haven't showed any kind of evidence that they care about the people in this country. They care about the welfare of the bankers and the banks, because that's what their charter shows. And they've said that.
And it's even worse, because what they've done since 2008 is increase the total debt by almost 40 to 50%. Now, we're not just talking about government debt, which is unsustainable, but we're talking about corporate debt. 44% of the corporate bonds in the last 2 years are triple B or lower. In other words, basically junk bonds. And corporations are selling these, and central banks are buying some of them. And they're holding on to them as a way of channeling money to the corporations. And what do the corporations do with that money? They buy their stock. So they're creating stock bubbles, but they're doing it by going deeper into debt. And so the debt increases. I often say it's very much like using a credit card to pay a mortgage. You're just increasing the total debt that you have without the means to pay it back. Now, that's the real secret to this. That's the elephant in the room. These banks are carrying huge volumes of unsustainable financial assets on their books, and they're trying to keep them close to face value so they can keep buying and selling them, because they make their money from trading them. But they know they're worthless. So they've got to get money from somewhere. And where have they gotten it from? They've gotten it from quantitative easing, 0% interest rates, and now most of Europe has negative interest rates. Now, one thing people don't understand about negative interest rates is that this is the end of savings as we know it. It means if you put your money in a bank, if you put $1,000 in a bank, they're going to charge you interest to keep it there. That's negative interest rates. So you're losing your savings. What incentive is there It's bad enough if the federal bonds are at 1%. What's the incentive to save if you lose money by saving? And so this is to discourage it.
Well, one thing that I wanted to talk about is the insane pressure that they're putting on Trump. They want to get rid of Trump at all costs. It appears that Trump and them are at odds with each other, right? I'm still confused, and you need to talk about this stuff. I'm confused how Trump can possibly, when the whole banking system is against him, how does he win? I mean, how does he? I mean, they want to get rid of him, but how does he win when he has like everyone around him trying to, that just cares about them because they can buy everybody off with money and blackmail?
Well, they already have bought the Democratic and Republican Party, and that's part of the problem Trump has had with getting his real economic policy through. So I think the president has made a mistake in one area. He was correct in 2016 to attack the so-called Obama recovery. Remember, we were told by Hillary, look how great the economy is, the stock market's booming, unemployment is down. Well, real unemployment is still pretty high. Many people have part-time jobs. Many people have given up looking. So we still have a large percentage of the potential workforce unemployed. And a stock market bubble is not prosperity. But Trump was reduced to trying to claim that, even though he correctly attacked it in 2016, because he couldn't get through an infrastructure bill, because the Republicans wouldn't work with him on it, and neither would the Democrats. Now, he's fighting with Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, and this is where I want to say he's making another mistake, because the issue is not just low interest rates. Low interest rates are necessary if you're going to rebuild the physical economy, infrastructure, rebuild industry, create new industrial jobs, small and medium enterprises. You need low interest rates for that. But if you have low interest rates with no requirement as to where the money goes, it goes into bubbles. It goes into increasingly risky investments to try and make bigger and bigger profits. And so he's caught with this problem of trying to keep the stock market up as a sign of prosperity going into 2020. And this is where Wall Street has him. They've got him. This is his Achilles heel. Now, how do you deal with that? Well, there's one other point here. Besides these three financial scams, William Dudley, the former Federal Reserve President of New York, which is the most important, most powerful of the Federal Reserve positions, did an op-ed in Bloomberg saying that the Fed should not work with Trump, that the Fed has a mandate to protect the economy, Trump is bad for the economy, so the Fed should do something, if necessary, make sure Trump is not reelected. This is not only a banker's dictatorship, but it's a banker's coup.
It's
saying
treason.
They should sabotage the economy. Of course it is. Exactly. Now, what can Trump do? I think there are a couple things that he was on the right track in 2016, and he fell off that because of the Russiagate scandal that took so much energy for him, which was a complete fraud, as we know. And then secondly, because of the rejection, or the, I should say the opposition to him from people like Paul Ryan and many of the Republicans who don't support his idea of infrastructure investment, space investment, things of that sort. So what he's got to do is go back to what he was talking about in 2016, which really is parallel to LaRouche's four laws. Glass-Steagall, banking separation. You create a situation where investment banks can't take the money from commercial banks. The commercial banks are protected for savings, for checking accounts, business accounts, and as avenues for investment in local economy, small and medium businesses and so on. Investment banks are not protected. They're never going to be bailed out again under Glass-Steagall. If someone wants to speculate, you know, let them speculate, but don't expect a bailout. So that's the first thing. Glass-Steagall will correct some of the problems that led to the crisis in 2008 and have continued. And remember, the Dodd-Frank bill was a piece of crap. It did nothing except it was partly written by the derivatives dealers. Second step, a national credit policy. And this is where what John Kennedy was trying to do in 1963 was right. What Hamilton did when he founded the country was right. You issue credits through the Treasury, not through private banks, because if you do it through private banks, you give them, first of all, the revenue on interest, but secondly, the control over where the money goes. Instead, if you have a national bank that then takes as its purpose funding necessary programs, for example, new platforms of infrastructure, that these are jobs that will create people who will have income, they'll become good consumers, they'll have a spin-off effect, but more importantly, good infrastructure cheapens the cost of everything, so it increases the national productivity.
So it's a true public banking system.
Yeah.
Right?
And it would be, it'd be a true public banking system, but here's the trick. It has to be done through the Congress, and the Congress is a mess. But if the president
That's an understatement.
If the president leads and gets the American people on his side with this, the Glass-Steagall national credit policy, and investment into real physical production, not funny money and speculation, then we'd end up with a Congress that instead of being terrified of the bankers, would be terrified of their constituents. And they would be forced to do what their constituents.
Which is what we need.
Yes. Exactly.
So it's crazy. So now with this Federal Reserve guy, the most powerful one in history, or that is still alive pretty much, coming straight out and saying we need to do a coup. I mean, they're not even hiding it anymore. We need to take Trump out of here. We are mixing. They're always saying the Fed needs to be separate because of politics, right? And they need to get the politics out of the monetary policy. So they're laying their hands down and saying, yeah, I guess we've always been political. And now we're going to come out and tell everybody.
Well, the idea of the independence of the Fed is always a fraud. Their only independence is from sound economic policy. They've always been there to protect and defend the interests of the biggest banks. And you can see that once Glass-Steagall was gone and once some of the chipping away of the banking regulation happened, we lost the savings and loan institutions in this country. We had a consolidation so that instead of being able to go to a local banker who knows you to borrow, you have to go to someone in Manhattan. You know, there was a joke in Texas years ago when North Carolina National Bank took over farming community banks in Texas, and they said, what does NCNB stand for? They said, no credit for nobody. You know, that's what happened. We put the control of monetary policy in the hands of people with a single purpose, which is to expand and increase their power and their control. Now, what we've always said, what LaRouche has always emphasized, is that this is where you have to look at the intersection between finances and strategic policy and finances and intelligence policy, because the intelligence community and what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex are all interconnected through corporate boards of directors, globalized corporations, banks, insurance companies, think tanks like the Council on Foreign Relations, and so on. They represent what LaRouche used to call a slime mold that controls everything. Now, when Trump came in and said he's going to stop these wars, they reacted ferociously against it. They said he's an agent of Putin, that fighting to stop terrorism in Syria is really helping Putin. Well, it is. Putin wanted to work with Trump to crush the terrorists in Syria, and it largely worked. But what do? They say, oh, that just shows that Trump is being blackmailed by Putin.
Let me tell you, it's a perfect example. I just saw a study that showed the number of suicides of our soldiers has not gone down. It's still at historic highs. And I charted it out. You know, it's like 21 a day with only 36 states reporting. Charted it out. You know, these suicides really need to be looked at as combat deaths. You know, it's a outcome of war. But World War I, we've already eclipsed World War I losses and Vietnam I losses in combat, just based on suicides over the last 15 years. And human beings are not meant to kill other human beings en masse. So for these bankers and for all these people to continually want war. You know, they're anti-people. They don't, for anybody to think that they're going to side on the, what's best for humanity when we have all these people dying of suicide, because no amount of psychological treatments is going to keep people from dealing with mass killing of other human beings. So I don't know how you're going to get past that until they have a different mindset where they actually care about humanity. And it's a perfect example of why the bankers cannot have this kind of power and why the public banking system needs to go in the hands of the Treasury, like Hamilton did, and the Congress. But can you continue on what you were saying? I just had to throw that in there because I just did an article on it, and it was a perfect for me to bring it up.
But no, you're absolutely right. This is one of the points that Trump made in the 2016 campaign, that Hillary Clinton wanted to continue these wars, regime change wars, where we lose our young people, whether they're killed in combat or whether they're mentally and psychologically destroyed by five or six terms of duty. That's what happens. On top of which, you build up trillions of dollars of debt. And how's that going to be paid off? I mean, Trump made the point, with what we've spent on the Afghan war, we could have put almost every child in America yes. into a college.
Exactly
and paid
right.
for it. So, yeah. So these are the military-industrial complex, or what we at LaRouche refer to as the British Empire, because the American side of this is Wall Street through their connections with the City of London. And we saw this explicitly in the regime change coup against Trump, that it was the British who launched the Russiagate story. And who did they do it through? The Obama intelligence community of pro-British operatives like Brennan and Clapper. And they used Christopher Steele's dossier when even Comey knew Steele was a fraud. But Comey committed fraud against the FISA court, and hopefully this will come out either in the second Horowitz report or in the Durham report. But look, I think one of the points you made earlier, Sarah, is so important. Much of this is now out in the open. They did a lot of this with the expectation that Hillary would win, and they could cover up the whole Russiagate story. They could go ahead with wars and continue the regime change policies. And Trump, with all his problems, and he has some problems in terms of getting off subject and getting distracted. And, you know, it's hard not to when they're coming at you every single day the way they have been. But with all that said, he's fought these people. He's fought the intelligence community. He's fought the corrupt media. He's fought the globalists. He's fought the people pushing fake science to try and convince us that the reason the Earth is heating up, if it is because we're consuming too much. This is nothing but an eco-fascism, as we've called it, ecological fascism. Convince people they have to reduce their standards of living. Now, are the bankers going to reduce theirs? You know, they have these conferences all the time where they all fly to places to talk about how bad it is to have airplanes. So we're seeing utmost hypocrisy and ironic fraud committed. But now, because of Trump fighting, because of what my organization is doing and what a number of other truth-seeking individuals are doing in their reporting and they're bringing these things up, what you do, you bring these things out so people can't escape the fact that we are turning our back on our veterans. And this is not just a money question. We're turning our back on our children when we send them to schools where they're being organized against their parents to say that their parents are consuming too much and that's why the earth is heating up. This is reminiscent of the Hitler Youth turning in their parents. So they're trying to do this on behalf of what? Green finances, on behalf of bankers' dictatorship. So the more they're open and the more we bring this out, the more people wake up. And there still is a global rebellion underway. They're trying to snuff it out in Britain on the fight over Brexit. The European Union just pulled off a coup to defeat the government of Italy, which won't last very long, because if the new government comes in and does what the European Union wants, the Italian people will revolt. We haven't seen the end of the Yellow Vest rebellion in France. We may even see a rebellion here in Germany, although the Germans are so passive and submissive, it may not happen. But I think the Trump 2020 election is going to be a key point in history. And if he fights it on the right basis, what we've been talking about, the economic policy and the ending war, working with the Japanese, with the Chinese, with the Russians to deal with the problems of North Korea and Iran, working to stabilize international finance by going back to fixed exchange rates to squeeze out the George Soroses and the other speculators, well, the world will look much brighter. And finally, to give hope to people, I think Trump's decision to launch a Moon-Mars mission is really important. If you think back to the 60s, what Kennedy did, and as a young man, as a boy when Kennedy was president, we were excited about curing disease, greening the deserts, exploring space. There was an optimism, scientific and technological optimism. And that was destroyed by the manipulation of currencies, by the so-called environmentalism, and by these wars, these endless wars. We've got to give children something better than cell phones and social networking and being concerned with whether they're popular on Facebook. And I think the president can do it. We in the population who know some of these things have to be out fighting for these ideas and trying to put him in the right direction. But you know, this 2020 election is a real turning point in history.
It's a big deal. It's scary. You know, when you talk about the bankers wanting to go to this crypto, it's not crypto, it's a digital currency, their plan, and I've been doing a lot of research on this, their plan is to have a global cryptocurrency. But when it couples with those other proposals you're talking about, that's complete world domination of currency. And where do you see China and Russia sitting with that? I mean, that could explode the whole... I mean, that could get really scary.
Well, this is where it's interesting. You know, China and Russia are among the leading purchasers of gold right now. They're not buying into this global cryptocurrency or global digital operation. They're playing around with it a little bit. They're looking at it. But what is China doing, for example? And why is there an attempt to derail China? Because China is doing what we used to do. Mm-hmm. They're generating large volumes of credit, but not to pay debt, but to build railroads, to build dams, to build nuclear power plants in Africa, to give people work that has some meaning. And this is something that Trump was very interested in when he met with Jack Ma and then when he met with Xi Jinping. This is why he likes Xi Jinping, because Xi is someone who's saying, we can build. We can build all over the world and we can make the world better. So when Trump said he wanted to work with Xi Jinping, all the same people who were attacking Putin started coming out attacking China, saying China is setting up debt traps in Africa. Well, you know what the debt traps in Africa were? Colonial policy, where the British and French and Belgians and others went in and charged the Africans for the luxury houses that they were building for themselves.
Oh, geez.
And now you have the Chinese building railroads. And, you know, I've met African diplomats here in Berlin quite a bit. And someone says to them, well, the Chinese are stealing your resource. And they said, no, they're not. They're helping us develop our resources.
Well, so let me ask you, though, Asia is what rising. Is about what about Hong Kong and the takeover of Hong Kong? Is that a manufactured situation or is it real? They're worried about communist takeover. Go ahead.
Well, Hong Kong was a British colony for 100-something years. And when people talk about Hong Kong's legacy of freedom, you can't find that in British colonialism. They had no legislature. They had no power at all. It all came from London. And remember, the British stole Hong Kong during the Opium Wars when they were forcing opium on the Chinese. So this whole idea about British freedom and so on... Now, look, there are probably some legitimate grievances, just as there were in Ukraine, just as there are whenever there's a regime change. The question is, are these being exploited for other purposes? And what we see is the National Endowment for Democracy is spending money to train Hong Kong militants. George Soros is pouring money into Hong Kong because they want to derail the Belt and Road Initiative. They don't give a damn about freedom of people in Hong Kong. They want to derail China's...
It's never about the people. Ever. Ever. That's what people need to realize. Ever.
No.
That makes...
Yeah. But they use the people.
Yes, they do.
They use the legitimate grievances of people, like in the Arab Spring, for example, or in Ukraine. There were some legitimate grievances, but we ended up bringing into power a government that depended on neo-Nazi militia units to run the country and then use that against the Russian population. And when Putin reacted to that, we said Putin is trying to take over Ukraine. So if you dice all these things and cut it back, it's exactly what you said. These are not for the people. The Ukrainian government of Poroshenko drove the standard of living down in Ukraine. The International Monetary Fund came in and halved the standard of living in Ukraine. So is there unrest in Ukraine? Yeah. Why? Because the Western bankers imposed more debt on them and looted them. So, you know, I think if you look at these situations and you look at Hong Kong, the real issue here is not whether there's extradition from Hong Kong to China, because they've decided against that. The real issue is how can you rub a thorn in the side of China and distract them from their otherwise very effective policy of bringing in new nations into the Belt and Road Initiative.
Well, let me ask you, I had Bill Binney on, and he was saying that we are ahead of China in the censorship and the constant surveillance of the people, face recognition, whatever it is, where you completely censor people, and you know, the social credit score and all that stuff. We're ahead of China, and they're actually following our lead. But if you were listening to our media, you would think that, you know, China's the most communist, they are just completely controlling their people, the social credit system and everything else. But he's saying, no, we have the more advanced technology, and they're following our lead, and we are way ahead of them. What would you say to that?
Well, that's what I love about Bill Binney, and I've done a number of shows with him. Bill is an honest patriot, and he has no bone to pick with anyone except the people who are using these surveillance technologies to profile and control the American people. Bill and I were on a show in Salt Lake City the other day, and he brought up the fact that just outside of Salt Lake City, they have the largest data collection center in the world. It's the size of, I think he said, 8 football fields. And it's got 25,000 people working there. And he said, even with 25,000 people, you couldn't possibly sort through all the metadata. So why are they doing it? They're doing it so if they need it, they have ways of profiling absolutely everyone. Now, this is not just the NSA. This is the private sector, the Facebook, the Google, these other companies, Amazon. I mean, look, Amazon, the owner of Amazon owns the Washington Post and has large contracts to do the cloud computing for the CIA. Now, this is where you see the private sector intersecting intelligence operations so that it's indistinguishable one from the other. And Bill on this point is absolutely right. That, you know, people who are worried, or you know, the British talk about the Chinese, supposedly you get your picture taken 11,000 times an hour if you walk down the street in London.
Oh, geez. Yeah, and that's what he means by we're way ahead of them. But you would never think that if you were watching the media.
And the point is, no one wants an authoritarian state. But the way you avoid an authoritarian state is you empower the people. And one of the things the Chinese have done is they've lifted 800 million people out of poverty in the last 2 decades. Not only that, but they intend by 2025 to have a middle class of 350 million people.
Wow.
That's the size of the American population. Our middle class is collapsing.
Wow, that's power.
Student loans, debt, and so on. Yeah.
Wow.
So what Trump saw in talking with Xi Jinping is we should do business together. And look, we do have to work out some of these trade things. And I think Trump is right And sometimes when he says it's not China's fault that they took advantage of our poor leadership, Clinton and Obama and Bush signed away the store, and then we complain that someone's charging higher prices at the store.
These absolute what? Yeah. What? Who's somebody who's doing strategy for a business? Who's going to say no? I want to pay more. You charge me more. Are you sure you can do this? You know, it's not. I mean, once in a while you might actually do it with a friend, but you're not going to do that. And that's he's exactly right.
Well, and he's also right on this whole question of there should be protections of intellectual property and things of that sort. But this is another area where the Chinese in some areas are moving ahead of us, like space. The Chinese are going to be, they're already on the moon. The Indians are on the moon right now. So, you know, we should work with these countries. We should have a collaboration.
Now, they're ahead in the quantum computing. They're ahead in growing organs. Yeah. They're ahead in genetic stuff. They're ahead in the Asia, if you will, are ahead in a lot of medical advances because our FDA has pretty much shut us down here. And any advances, people have to go to the East to do it because that's where you have the freedom. So if you want to know who's ahead, it's them. And it's not because we don't have the innovation power. It's because we are oppressed. I mean, I've been doing this show for 5 years. And the medical tourism is booming, and it's not because we lack scientists. Our scientists are frustrated. They're all having to leave to do stuff. Anyways, keep going. You tell me you were on a track talking more about...
That's very important. What I was going to say is that where the negotiators for the United States are wrong in dealing with China, we do have a large trade deficit. The way to deal with it is to increase trade overall, not to put tariffs, because the tariffs don't guarantee that we're going to then have the factories replacing the goods we're no longer getting or that are too expensive, that we're going to produce them in the United States, because we don't have a credit policy to encourage people to set up new industries and so on. But where the Chinese are right is in resisting American-style banking. And this is something that most people don't know as part of the negotiations. But Peter Navarro, who's one of the chief negotiators, hates China. He wrote a book called Death by China. And Navarro is saying that China is refusing to open up their banking sector to American banking techniques. Well, good for them. We shouldn't be open to those banking techniques. We should be shutting them down. The Chinese don't want the United States. Well, they don't want U.S. banks to come in and take the Chinese dollars that they have and take the treasury bills they hold and take the savings of the Chinese people and put it into the speculative bubble. The Chinese are using the savings and so on as seed capital to fuel their infrastructure programs because you need something behind it.
They don't want the city of London. They don't want the British crown, the city of London, a small group of families to control China. They want China to maintain. They want their culture to be maintained. They want their country to be maintained. They don't want this small group of families doing what they did to the United States to them.
Well, and they also saw under communism something similar under the Mao period where you had small groups of families controlling everything. And, you know, people who say to me, but China is a communist country, I just ask how many communist countries have growing numbers of billionaires? Now, the Chinese have what they call socialism with Chinese characteristics, and that means entrepreneurism. The Chinese are businessmen. They love doing business. And instead of being afraid of that, what Xi Jinping has said to Trump is, come join us in the Belt and Road Initiative. The Chinese have even offered to give some of their U.S. Treasury holdings into an infrastructure bank in the United States so that we can have a few miles of high-speed rail in the United States. You know, China's going to have 25,000 miles of high-speed rail by 2025. A high-speed rail in the United States means you don't stop every 3 minutes.
Why do they, you know, we are confused because we don't trust anyone because we've watched ourselves take advantage of people. We are afraid to let the Chinese do anything for us because we're afraid they'll take advantage of us like we do to others. How do we know we can trust them? How do we know they aren't going to take us over?
Well, this is where there was a very interesting proposal by one of my colleagues, Paul Gallagher. What should we do with the China issue? He said, what we should do is Trump and Xi Jinping should sit down with a few of their top people and hammer out an agreement to establish a fixed exchange rate between the yuan and the dollar based on relative productivity standards and production values of the two countries, so that we could have fixed exchange rates so you couldn't have currency manipulation that would take advantage of one country or the other. And if the US and China could do that, because we have a large volume of trade, then you could bring other countries in. Japan would join that. Korea would join it. You could say we're going to go back to a gold reserve system if that's necessary, but it may not even be necessary. But just in case, the Chinese have been buying a lot of gold. But the idea of fixed exchange rates means that you can do more business, because you know if you invest in a country or you make a deal with a country to sell something, you know what the price will be 6 months from now. It's not going to be affected by George Soros doing a run against a currency. And that's one of the worst aspects of the World Trade Organization, is that they never allowed, or they never prevented, speculators from controlling the equity relationships between countries. And so we have trade balances built up, or, you know, Argentina is a perfect example of a country that's falling apart. The International Monetary Fund repeatedly destroyed economies by saying that you pay the debt first, then you can invest in your own economy. So if we get rid of some of these international rules, the World Trade Organization, the IMF, go back to bilateral and then multilateral agreements, not like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that Obama and Hillary were negotiating, but more like the previous kind of multilateral negotiations, you could solve these things. And you'd solve them based on the physical economy of a country. Otherwise, how can you trust anything?
Exactly. Well, Don't you care about the people? Don't you? I mean, the problem is, if all you're caring about is solving your own derivative bubble, solving your own debt problem, and not caring, because that's who's in control of our country right now, are people who have problems with, you know, big bubbles and debt. If those are the people running, they're not going to make decisions that are right for the people and for the future. They're going to make decisions that are about keeping them from going bankrupt and, you know, them losing their power and control, versus how do we look for what's best for humanity going into the future.
Well, you ask the question, how do you trust somebody? If somebody's just printing money and saying, oh, believe me, we're backing this up, believe me, it's worth something, the dollar's always been good, well, there's no basis for trust. I mean, the U.S. has built up trust over a couple of centuries because we were a productive economy. And people knew behind the dollar were steel mills, were productive farmers, were the science and researchers who were building new things and new technologies.
Hardworking people.
Yeah. Now, what do we have behind that now? We have computers. We have computer notations. We have notational values of so-called financial instruments, where even the people who are buying and selling them admit they have no idea of the underlying value, just the face value on the contract. So how can you have trust with them?
We have financial instruments, yes. We're based on a house of cards instead of, and the thing is the fact that our scientists, and this is why I brought this up earlier, the fact that our scientists have to leave the country for these amazing inventions that they have. Now, the high-tech software industry is still able to stay in this country, but a lot of the other sciences have to leave. And so we're not only exporting our factories, we're exporting our human intellectual property, because we aren't allowing them to compete locally. And so they have to go elsewhere. And so we have, that has to change.
Well, and that's why if you look at an economy as something which adds value through physical production, and not just the production of goods, but the constant research and development and scientific advances that end up cheapening the cost of production, which means you're increasing the productive power of your workforce. Now, then you can say, well, here's what our dollar is worth. We have so many steel mills, so many auto plants. We have so many people working to rebuild infrastructure. And therefore, the dollar has something behind it. Then the Chinese could say, okay, we understand that. And you come see us, see what we're doing. You know, a lot of people who attack China have never been there. And I haven't been there, but I have friends, including Mrs. LaRouche, who have been there repeatedly over the last 25 years. And they talk about the incredible advances and the beautiful cities. And then you see in Germany, which used to have a reputation as the high-tech center of Europe, you see the breakdown of the train system now in Germany, something that was unthinkable 15 years ago. So we're looting our physical capital in the West, while in the East, and not just China, but India, Vietnam, South Korea, and Japan, they're investing in people and science and technology. And we have to go back to that. And I think this is what the president is trying to do. I think he has to be much more clear in what he wants to do. And what we've been talking about here, Sarah, is really what the president should go up before the Congress and say, look, let's stop kidding ourselves. We're a house of cards, but we still have an underlying value system and a constitution that enables us to act for the interests of our people. And damn it, we're going to start doing that. And he'd have total popular support.
He would, because people are hungry. They're thirsty for it. Well, gosh, this has been such a great conversation. I absolutely love talking to you. What do you want to say to end this out?
Well, just the main thing is that the people in this country have to start thinking on this level. Recognize that we're human beings and have a creative capability that we're not using. And trying to channel surf between 150 channels is not a use of creative power. What I'd like to do is continue to have these discussions. I write articles regularly. I'd offer your viewers a link to my blog page. If people would like to get access to my blog each week, send me an email and I'll send you the link. And you can reach me through my personal email, harleysch@gmail.com. That's harleysch@gmail.com. And I like to do it through my personal email because I like to engage with people in discussion and see what people are thinking about and what they're concerned about. And, you know, it's one way, you know, I don't do Twitter, I don't do Facebook, but through email and then giving people access to my blog page for free, I think that's a way we can increase the dialogue that's going on.
Well, so I really appreciate what you're doing because it's a more intellectual, serious discussion. I mean, everything is just so watered down and shallow and we're never getting to the meat of what needs to go on. And it's all, you know, media clips. It's just this, we got to get serious and we got to have these kind of discussions and we got to realize that it's not people who are trying to solve their own, you know, loss of empire and debt problem and what's best for the people. So I really appreciate what you're doing. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me on and happy to do it again.